You listening to The Block Report with JR and Rashida, a.k.a. POCC Radio. Our guest is political prisoner Mumia Abu-Jamal, a famed political prisoner. Many of you may know him, if not by name, by the persona, the dreads, one of the founding members of the Black Panther Party in Philadelphia at the age of 16. He has been locked down since 1981 for a crime that he did not commit, which was the alleged killing a police officer. Became a supporter of the MOVE organization in exposing the police terrorism that the group was encountering because of their political and spiritual beliefs. How you doing, Moo?
Good, JR. And Rashida. Cool, I'm cool. Long live John Africa.
Mumia, can you describe the conditions of the concentration camp you're in and what's going on with your case?
Well, this joint is probably very similar to joints all over the country, especially in California when you think about it. It's 22 and 2, locked down, meaning 22 hours in the cell, 2 hours in a cage that they call the yard. The yard has about 15 or 17 dog pens, about 50 square feet or something like that. The case is on appeal to the Third Circuit and the federal courts in Pennsylvania. And, you know, it's a rumble. Like every day here, it's every day, you know, courtroom is just another place to rumble.
Are you still on death row right now?
Absolutely. Nothing changed. Ain't nothing changed. I'm surprised sometimes when I read stuff in the paper because I've been like, damn, who they talking about? You know, I've read that I got life, I'm out in population, I'm rolling. I'm in the same, you know, cell surrounded by dudes in, you know, the same type of situation, death row cells. Ain't nothing changed.
You, like so many of our political prisoners, such as Imam Jamil Alameen, are locked up primarily because of your ability to communicate with the average person. Why is that a threat to the United States government?
Well, you know, what we've had in this country, and I'm not just talking about since the 1960s, but what we've had for literally like 500 years is a war against black life. As I was telling Rashid a few moments ago, you know, I was talking about Columbus coming to the United States. Well, the first day he came, he brought to the so-called Native American slavery. And when they died out so quickly from that genocide, a priest named Bartolome de las Casas wrote to Spain and said, look, we need to go to Africa and pick some of them people up because they're tougher than these Indians were. That brought unmitigated hell on millions and millions of African people. You know, and that war, you know, goes on today. Look at the condition of black people in America, and it's just, it's sad. I mean, it's really quite messed up, no matter how you want to count it. I mean, if you want to talk about education, you want to talk about health care, you want to talk about housing, you want to talk about, hey, the prison industrial complex. We're badly impacted anywhere you look, and that's because, you know, whether we're conscious of it or not, every day we breathe, we're at war.
Mumia, can you talk about the U.S. government's tracking, incarceration, and assassination of the children of black political leaders, such as your son Jamal, such as Chairman Fred Hampton Jr., son of Chairman Fred Hampton of the Black Panther Party of Chicago, or DeAndre Williams, who's the grandson of Chancellor Williams, Tupac Shakur, the son of Black Panther, member of Fini Shakur. Can you talk about that?
A lot of people, even so-called scholars, people of the so-called left, will tell you that COINTELPRO ended about 1971-72, when it was uncovered by a group of radicals in Media, Pennsylvania, which outlined COINTELPRO. But that's not so. A former FBI agent, who was a black man, raised in Baltimore, wrote a book about his life in the FBI. And he, you know, read the files, read the library works, and he said, if something works, why do you stop doing it? He said, what they did is they changed the name, and they're doing the same thing then as they're doing now. I mean, this is not just a guess. If you look at the so-called Patriot Act, everything in the Patriot Act, that is, everything that is law now, was illegal during the 1970s. You know, how they're going through people's mail, how they're listening to phone calls, not just prison, but everybody. How they're, you know, going in people's houses, how they're setting people up and framing them. All that stuff now, they're using the system and the law to do what was illegal back in the 1970s. People who were sons of Panthers and daughters of Panthers, if they manifested the least amount of political consciousness, I am convinced they were targeted. And they didn't have to be sons or daughters of Panthers, but just sons and daughters of people who were conscious, like the grandson of Malcolm X, like the son of Chancellor Williams, the great African-American historian. If people understand that it's a state of war, you won't be surprised with what the enemy does. But if you believe the fiction that we are free, then you will be surprised. It'll come from left field, and you'll never see it coming.
You talked about your life and the lives of many in the Black Panther Party, as well as your analysis reflecting back on those years. What are some of the most important things that you think that the young people of today can learn from the Black Panther Party?
I think the most important thing is that this was a young people's party. Most people your age and Rashida's age, when you think of Huey or Eldridge or Bobby, you think of them as old heads. It's natural. But they weren't old heads when they started the Black Panther Party. No, Eldridge was older than most. But people don't remember that Huey was like 24 years old. 24 years old. And he built one of the most powerful revolutionary organizations in recent black history. That's the most important thing. I want people, especially young people, to understand that they have it within themselves to build whatever they feel needs to be built. He didn't ask for permission. I mean, he didn't, like, write a letter to Malcolm when he was alive or to Dr. Martin Luther King and say, hey, this is a good idea. I think I need to do this. Him and some brothers got together, and he said, we got to do this. And they studied, and they made it happen. They did it. And most of the established leaders were aghast. They were freaked out. They were not at all pleased. But he didn't care, and they didn't care. And young people today shouldn't care what old heads and elders think. Do what you feel in your heart is right, what you feel is necessary to bring our people forward from this situation we're in. And you'll get a lot of opposition. But so what? We get in opposition every day anyway. Thank you both, JR and Rashida.
Thank you.
The Block Report. Just love to the youth, love to all the people. Continue to resist, continue to love and support your people. You know, learn from history and learn even the mistakes from history. I think I was pretty honest in We Want Freedom in talking about many of the mistakes we made. Nobody's perfect. You know, we try, we fail, we get up, we try again. We're only human. But it's our job to free our people from this hell we're living in and have been living in for 500 years.
You have 15 seconds left to talk.
You're doing a hell of a job.
Man, keep your head up. No, we struggling for you, Moo. We ain't forgot you.
This is Mumia Abu-Jamal on the Block Report. The
Block Report is produced by J.R. Rashida, edited by Malcolm Marshall, and engineered by Devril Ross and Wesley Burton. This particular segment was recorded by Noel Hanrahan. And for POCC Radio, we say one prisoner, one contact, and free them all. Free all political prisoners.